Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. This show today features Megan Redshaw. She is an attorney, a journalist, and an individual rights advocate. She took the time to listen to every word spoken at the VRBPAC meetings, those FDA meetings where they were looking at approving or recommending the COVID vaccines, the Moderna and the Pfizer shots, sat through these couple days and had to share some of the wisdom and knowledge and information that she obtained from that. It's quite informative. We then talk about everything vaccines for kids, parental rights. She has a personal story related to that, and natural medicine approaches. That's right in her wheelhouse. What to do about these COVID vaccines. Bernadette ends the show with information for parents on what to do about COVID vaccines for children. There's graphics you can download. This is important information. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. Something is going on in our world that makes me mostly want to cry, but it's so crazy, I almost want to laugh. I'm going to give you a couple quotes. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Martin Luther King. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Edmund Burke. The world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything. Albert Einstein. I don't know if you've witnessed what's been going on with our regulatory agencies, but the FDA Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee has a long name, VRBPAC, and the CDC's ACIP, which is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. These are the organizations that are supposed to safeguard our children, that are supposed to make sure that if products are being brought to market, that they are safe, that they are going to do what the pharmaceutical company claims they're going to do, but certainly make sure that they're not going to harm anybody. They have almost unanimously authorized this past couple weeks the Moderna emergency use authorization for their mRNA injection into 6 to 17 year olds. And then the next day, Pfizer and Moderna's products were authorized emergency use for 6 months and up. So basically now all children 6 months and older are in the crosshairs of these technologies that are still experimental. What does the head of the CDC do? The next day, well, a couple days later, turns around and authorizes this, and we are now having this being applauded as, isn't this wonderful? This is the American Medical Association, AMA, Morning Rounds, June 21st, 2022. Leading the news, Pfizer, Moderna, COVID-19 vaccines for youngest children rolling out in the U.S. this week. The AP reports, quote, the nation's infants, toddlers, and preschoolers are finally getting their chance at COVID-19 vaccination as the U.S. rolls out shots for tots this week. The FDA green-lighted the Moderna and Pfizer shots on Friday, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention recommended them Saturday. The authorization makes the vaccine available to roughly 18 million youngsters under 5. It goes on to talk about our administration applauding this move. The American Academy of Pediatrics, dedicated to the health of all children, a message from AAP President, June 21st, 2022. Dear AAP members, this is an exciting week. Vaccines for children ages 4 and younger are finally arriving! Exclamation mark. We should celebrate this moment, which fills me with optimism. For all of us, it has been a long, frustrating wait for vaccines to protect our youngest children. 18 months to be exact after the first vaccines were authorized for adults. I know many pediatricians are planning to offer the vaccines immediately to families who are eager to protect their children. It goes on and on. This is tragic. This is horrifying. We know that these vaccines are not needed for children. Children are not getting deathly ill from COVID. There are reports of hospitalizations and deaths. These are almost certainly all or mostly with COVID, not from COVID. But kids are doing great. Three huge studies have just come out recently. One for the US, the death from COVID infection is 1 in 10,000 in that report. Almost 1 million kids surveyed in that document. Germany had 1 in 100,000 deaths from COVID. And know that most of the deaths from COVID, the way it's being rolled out, it's probably with COVID anyway. And then another report from the UK, 1 in 10,000. We have the data. Children are not at risk from COVID illness, period. We also have the data. Just look at the VAERS, look at open VAERS. We know the amount of harm being caused from these vaccines, from maiming, myocarditis, to death, and we have no idea what's happening long-term to things like fertility and autoimmunity and the immune system. This is a disaster. I'd like to cry and scream, but it's so crazy you almost want to laugh. But you folks, if you are a parent watching this or a grandparent or somebody you know has a child who's in the crosshairs of big pharma and big medicine and big business, it's up to us to protect. There's nobody left standing in between because your academies, pediatrics, AAP, your AMA, the American Medical Association, they're just dancing circles so happy we can finally get these products into your little baby. I'm Dr. Paul. Welcome, Megan Redshaw. We sat on a panel together, and that's when I got such a huge appreciation for you, your knowledge, your wisdom. And wow, it's great to have you on Against the Wind.
Well, thank you for having me. I have been a huge fan of yours for several years.
Oh, thank you. You are an attorney. You're a journalist. You have a background in political science, naturopathy, nutrition, exercise. You're my kind of person. You also work with several organizations that provide accurate information on COVID vaccines, and you advocate for individual rights. You are just the kind of person I like to meet. I like to hear from. I'd like to start with something that happened recently. These were the VRBPAC meetings, and I know you sat in and listened to those. I didn't have the time to do that. What happened? Can you just explain what VRBPAC is and what ended up happening? This had to do with the committee. I think it's part of the FDA, right? That's looking at whether or not to recommend these COVID vaccines for kids.
Yeah. So the CDC and the FDA both have what we would call a quote, independent vaccine advisory panel. So over the past 2 days, it was yesterday on Wednesday, and on Tuesday, the FDA's vaccine advisory panel met. And on the first day, it was about authorizing the Moderna COVID vaccine for ages, I think it was 6 to 17, because Moderna submitted an application, a request for authorization last year, and they put it on hold because of the concerns about myocarditis. Well, obviously, if Wednesday's meeting is about approving these vaccines for toddlers and infants, you kind of have to approve them for the age group in between. So Tuesday, we knew what was going to happen. They were going to approve this or authorize, right? The vaccine advisors recommend something for authorization. So they met to recommend Moderna's COVID vaccine for this middle age group. It then goes to the FDA, who can either accept or reject the committee's recommendation. Typically, what we see is if they recommend the COVID vaccine, they accept the recommendation. And if the vaccine committee doesn't recommend boosters or a particular COVID vaccine, the FDA will still recommend the COVID vaccine anyway. So that kind of sums up what the vaccine advisors do. They're supposed to go through all the data. They're supposed to have a public comment session where people, they select a certain number of people to call in and give like their feedback or comments about the authorization. And then the CDC usually gives a presentation. The FDA gives a presentation. And then they'll have like Pfizer or Moderna, whoever's companies doing the vaccine, give a presentation, and then they vote at the end. So Tuesday was Moderna's for that, you know, adolescent age group. Yesterday was for the infants and toddlers. And on both days, they unanimously, I think one was 21-0 and the other one was like 22-0, recommended Pfizer Moderna's vaccines for infants and toddlers and Moderna's vaccine for that adolescent age group.
Wow. So what struck you as someone who's
versed on the negative effects of these vaccines. So you know some of the science. I know this is in your wheelhouse. Was this science presented? Did they just ignore it? Was the public comment period fair? I mean, when I've gone before these sort of committees or at the state house and you're testifying, it seems like it's all preset with the people who have an agenda get all the time, and the other people are basically shut out.
Yeah, so I'll focus mostly on the babies and toddlers. The one point I'll make about Moderna's meeting on Tuesday is that we already knew that they were going to recommend it for authorization because it's a prerequisite to the babies and toddlers. And so we knew that was going to happen. The big hang up, like I said, was myocarditis. The CDC presented or confirmed 635 cases of myocarditis. They used the 18 to 39 age group, but don't quote me on that because the numbers kind of run together after 16 hours of hearings. But basically, their diagnostic criteria was very, it excluded, very narrowed. It like didn't include anybody who died from a heart attack after receiving a COVID vaccine, didn't make it to the hospital to get a diagnosis or anybody like that. It was very narrowed. And they came up with like 635 cases, called it good and authorized it. Wow. With the babies and toddlers, it was absolutely ridiculous. The public comment session is probably one of the best public comment sessions I've listened to. Congressman Louis Gohmert, hopefully I'm pronouncing his name right, called in and he gave a public comment. He was representing 17 other lawmakers. They recently submitted a letter to the FDA and the FDA's Burback panel, asking them to answer 19 questions before signing off on COVID vaccines for toddlers and infants. Really just called out the FDA, wanting to know about antibody-dependent enhancement and wanted to talk about the safety studies or the lack thereof, wanted to talk about the adverse event reports and VAERS, why the FDA hasn't done this or looked into that. Can they guarantee that children aren't going to be susceptible to more severe sickness if their immune systems are first exposed to this viral spike protein via a COVID vaccine? I mean, he went through about 8 of them, but he had 19 questions and they completely ignored him. Nobody addressed it. Nobody cared. They completely ignored him. Another guy called in and asked a really legit question. He said, how are you going to test for myocarditis in 6-month-old babies who cannot talk? What's your plan for this? Nobody had a plan for this. He basically told the FDA, he went through like a list and he's like, look, biodistribution studies have come out. You guys have done nothing. We've discovered that COVID vaccines can cause infertility. Women are complaining about their menstrual cycles. You guys have done nothing. There's been vaccine adverse events reported to VAERS, thousands and thousands of deaths, millions of adverse events. You guys have done nothing. Research has come out on prion's disease and COVID vaccines and myocarditis and COVID vaccines, and you guys have done nothing. And he went through just like hammered the FDA over and over and over, and basically saying, you know, you guys haven't done anything about this. You should be addressing these issues in the adult population and looking at what's happening to adults before you ever go after children. And one thing that the congressman said is, if these panel members sign off on COVID vaccines, if the Republicans get in power, he's putting forward a bill that will allow the vaccine injured to sue pharmaceutical companies, even if the vaccines are under emergency use authorization, as well as anybody, accomplice isn't the right word. I can't think of anybody basically who plays a role in that, allowing people to sue them, to kind of basically a passive kind of threat. Like, hey, if you guys sign off on this, I'm going to say that we should open up the floodgates of liability and we're going to make sure you guys can be included. Obviously, they didn't care. They had vaccine injured people on there talking about, you know, their vaccine injuries. On the opposing side, there were pediatricians who called in. And ironically, there was at least 2 people that I recognized from the previous day who got to talk, who gave the same spiel both days. And, you know, these mothers like, we need to have a choice and we need to be able to vaccinate our kids. And I thought it was ironic because another person called in and was like, hey, this is emergency use authorization. You guys have legal requirements you have to follow. You have to show that it's safe. You have to show that it's effective. You have to show that there's an emergency. And if 99.98% survival rate in children who get COVID, this is not an emergency. There's requirements that you have to meet to legally do this. And the panel completely ignored everything that these commentators, these citizens proffered forward. And in fact, I know I'm talking, you just interrupts me.
No, go for it.
At the end of the hearing, Dr. Paul Offit, we all know who he is, because if you've been around in the movement for a long time with the pediatric vaccines, you know Merck, rotavirus, Dr. Paul Offit, we all know him. And he was saying that he was a little bit concerned about Pfizer's vaccine because after two doses, it still didn't show that there was a great efficacy. But he was fine with, he's still supportive of it. He's like, I'm still supportive going forward. I'm supportive with the three doses, but we're probably going to need four doses. So going into it, and he made a statement, this isn't verbatim, but it was along this lines of saying, basically, let's approve it now, then we'll monitor it for efficacy and we'll decide what to do later. And as a parent, I'm like, you people are crazy. This is not how this works.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course, as a parent and parents who are listening, if you're still in denial of the fact that we have a problem on our hands with these so-called vaccines that aren't vaccines, that are triggering so much damage, if you're in denial because you're listening to the news and the sound points that are coming from public health, the news, the pharmaceutical companies that are making billions, pay attention to what Megan Redshaw has to say here. You're a mom, right?
Yes.
And an attorney.
Yes.
And this is your wheelhouse, and you've researched this extensively. Just in layman's terms for people who are listening, what is going on? How can we know everything that we know about the harms caused by this shot and how totally worthless it is for kids? It's not working. It's not even working for most adults as far as any sort of risk benefit analysis. So what's going on?
Well, I want to say two things. So one, kind of related, but an important point is that one of the people yesterday called in and they said, all the risk seems to be on the child or on the parents, because if your child gets vaccinated, there's no liability. So these people are authorizing this vaccine. They're eventually going to approve this vaccine to get on the childhood schedule, which is where it's going. And it's all about protecting the pharmaceutical companies from liability. So that's the first thing. It's not the root of the problem, right? But a lot of what you see now that's happening, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is about getting the COVID-19 vaccines covered under the NVICP, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which is this, it's still liability protection. It's very hard to sue under the NVICP for a vaccine injury. There's no rules of evidence. There's no discovery. It's ridiculous. And so until that happens, they have to push everything through emergency use authorization so that they're completely covered from liability. My question would be, obviously, you know, your product has the potential to cause a great risk of harm if you're doing these things. What this is all coming from, I mean, I don't know if we know for sure, but we know there's a lot of, there's obviously money involved. Pfizer's making billions, Moderna's making billions, people who've invested in these companies are making a lot of money. We know a lot of it is about control. It's not just about, it's nothing, none of it really is about public health at all, in my opinion.
Right.
If it was about public health, you would be making alternatives available. You might be promoting vaccines because you really believe that they work. There are people who believe that they work, but not to the exclusion of other things that we know that work.
Yeah.
It's about control. It's about universalized medicine, controlling what people have access to, money, and obviously power, which comes in through the mandates and restricting what we can and can't do, what we can and can't have access to. And obviously, if you believe in the World Economic Forum, which I do, and these pharmaceutical companies are a part of, it says this right on the World Economic Forum's website, then you know that that is an entity that it has a very warped idea of what the world should look like. And I think this is all heading to changing our society in a way that really is not beneficial to anybody who believes in what the United States of America stands for.
Yeah. The wording of the World Economic Forum is so clever. And in fact, you can get sucked into this one world, you know, we should all live together in harmony. And isn't this wonderful? And on a spiritual level, of course, right? I mean, we're all connected. It sounds beautiful. But then you just dig a little under the surface and you realize this is a massive attempt to just control the world. You know, vaccine passports. So they'll decide who goes where, whether or not you can travel. They may tie it into your carbon footprint. So you can't do this or that if you're not, you know, doing the right thing in that department. But, you know, as a parent, you've known even prior to COVID, the vaccine program was rolled out in a way that the program was more important than the health of the children. So we had to protect the program. And that program, most states, you had an out, right? You could get a philosophical or a religious exemption if you truly believed this is supposed to be a free country, right? The United States of America, with our Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights. I grew up overseas, so I'm not super, super trained on the U.S. law. But clearly, it's a country. It's a beacon to the world of freedom. And I feel like we're watching freedom just evaporate. What's your thought on that?
Well, I definitely think we're watching freedom evaporate, but it's almost like I almost feel like we're at war, but this is how we do war in the year 2022. So instead of like legit putting on, you know, our whatever you wear when you're in the armed forces and getting up your arms, you're like battling in this new way in 2022. So I think if people don't stand up and people don't do anything about it, we are going to lose it. Like if you don't speak up and you don't advocate and you don't get the right people elected and you're not, you know, pushing for these freedoms, preserving what you do have, they're going to be lost.
Yeah. I've seen a very powerful use of the weapon of censorship. I mean, you've heard my story where, you know, I publish a book. It's not a perfect book. It needs to be redone, the vaccine friendly plan. But the history of that little scenario was then the board starts coming after me. Then in January of 2019, they say, well, prove that the vaccine friendly plan is as safe as the CDC schedule. I bring in an outside expert. We look at every data point, all health outcomes. Oh, my Lord, the vaccine friendly plan is dangerous compared to non-vaxxed kids. We published that study. And 3 days later or 5 days later, they yanked my license. I'm a threat to public health. It's been an ongoing attempt to censor the information that I'm sitting on, which is a large population of unvaccinated kids and how incredibly healthy they are. So I know you're aware of censorship. What are you seeing?
Well, I think you are like an example of what happens to people when they speak out, especially in like the scientific community. They're making an example of you because there's going to be less people who publish books or less people that come out with those viewpoints if they think that their medical license is going to be at risk and their livelihood is going to be at risk. I know when your book first came out, I viewed you as kind of like, I probably thought that underneath you were more not anti-vaccine, but definitely more maybe critical or mindful of the potential adverse events and things associated with vaccines and the problem with the science surrounding vaccines. But you came off in your book as very, in my opinion, unbiased, like kind of just I'm presenting you with this information. And I know Jennifer, your co-author, is kind of the same way. But I think censorship is a huge issue. I mean, I used to run livinghole.org, which was, I would say I was the prominent voice. They would call it, you can call it the anti-vaccine movement, but I've never encouraged anybody to be anti-vaccine. I've encouraged people to make informed decisions and I've informed parents that they have a choice. But in doing that, I was labeled anti-vaccine, as I'm sure that you were when you published your vaccine friendly plan. It's not the anti-vaccine friendly plan. It's the vaccine friendly plan. I'm sure that you got the same thing. And I eventually stopped writing. I think, you know, I would get 100,000 views to my little blog in a day. I'm probably responsible for many, many hundreds of thousands of parents in the United States who vaccinated and no longer vaccinate or never vaccinated, which made me a threat. And I probably experienced similar things to what you did. And of course, those views and my blog were used against me, even by Child Protective Services. I mean, I think when you speak out, you're going to be censored and you're also going to be somewhat targeted. So obviously I write for Children's Health Defense now. I also write anonymously. I probably publish more articles on COVID-19 vaccines than anybody in the United States. I mean, I crank out probably usually at least 3 articles a day, thousands and thousands of words. And a lot of them aren't under my own name for obvious reasons. But yeah, getting around censorship is very difficult. But we are creative. And a lot of parents are smarter than they've been given credit for.
That's for sure. Parents, you are in control, even though it feels like you aren't. These approaches they have of trying to force you to take a dangerous product. Oh, if you don't take this, you can't go to school, or you can't go shopping, or you can't travel, or we just still have to stand our ground. That is the war, right, that we're in, is to say, no, I'm going to hold on to my freedom. This is where I draw a line in the sand. And I think a lot of people accepted the childhood vaccine schedule as safe and effective. We bought that marketing slogan as a fact, when in fact, the reality is nothing could be further than the truth. There is no safe vaccine. All vaccines, all pharmaceutical products have risk. It's all about being informed about the true risk and then making a decision. I think a lot of people maybe are going to start now questioning the childhood vaccine schedule. And maybe that's why my data is so dangerous, because it's comparing a version of the childhood vaccine schedule to unvaxxed kids. So since you write so much about COVID, you understand the literature, you understand the dangers, what is your message to parents if they're faced with this decision to vaccinate their kids? Because, you know, fast forward here, it's going to get approved, is going to be put on the regular schedule, and they're probably going to make it harder and harder for parents to decline the recommended schedule, or there's going to be some hammer, some consequence. What's your take? What do you recommend?
I always tell people, do not make a decision based out of fear, because whatever decision you make, it could potentially carry consequences. And that means that you turn off your TV and you turn off the propaganda and you actually start exposing yourself to all of the research, not just what you see on TV. Like, for example, I went through a government database and I know for a fact that our tax dollars, that HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, is using our tax dollars to pay media companies to manipulate us with only positive messaging of COVID-19 vaccines. Well, as you just said, there's no pharmaceutical product that doesn't carry a risk. So already you're being manipulated if your only source of information is Facebook or your nightly news or CNN or any of those news organizations. So if you're going to make a decision, go out and take your child vaccinated because you're scared of COVID. Actually look up and see what the risk of COVID is for your child and consider the risks of COVID vaccines. Consider how long they've been studied. Consider that no phase 3 clinical trials have been done. Look at the ingredients in them and also understand, okay, if you don't vaccinate, could your child get COVID? Yes. If you do vaccinate, could they get COVID? Absolutely. We know this is happening. Vaccines don't prevent COVID. If your child does, like, what's the risk of an adverse event from a vaccine, and compare it to the risk if your child gets COVID and gets long-term robust natural immunity from that variant, potentially strong protection against future variants. Parents have to consider that. And I think most parents, I've interviewed a lot of parents of vaccinated children from COVID vaccines, and every single one of them made a decision because they were either convinced that they were helping their neighbor, or they were convinced, or they were motivated by fear. Like, if I don't get COVID, if I don't get my child the COVID vaccine, my child is going to die. Nobody told them that your child has a almost 0% chance of dying. If they do have any chance, it's usually somebody that has a comorbidity. And that if your child gets injured from a vaccine, which could happen, you're on the hook for thousands and thousands of dollars of costs. And no, heart damage is not mild. There's no such thing as mild heart damage. Your heart is forever, your heart may improve, it may get better, but it's forever affected by the damage that could potentially come to it from a vaccine. And nobody knows this.
Yep. No, absolutely. It's all risk, in my opinion, when you really look at it. I mean, I have a practice of probably up to, 6 to 10,000. It used to be 15,000 patients. With the pressure on my practice, it is shrinking. But we have not had a single child end up in the hospital with COVID other than a vaccinated kid who had myocarditis. I had seen zero myocarditis up to that point in my career. I've been a busy pediatrician for 35 years. So this is a whole new ballgame, introducing this spike protein generating product that turns your body into actually manufacturing the poison. Folks, this is not a good idea. I'm not giving medical advice. I'm just sharing information here. I read somewhere that the FDA is making or has made a decision, or they're pushing through this idea that future trials on COVID vaccines won't be necessary. So then the companies can just make changes to the vaccine, updates, edits, whatever you want to call it, and not have to go through any sort of testing for safety, which I think is similar to what happens with the flu vaccine. I mean, there's no way they can test a new batch each year. They just make their best guess. They do whatever they do and they hope for the best.
Yeah, so this is happening. I don't know if anything's been 100% decided yet, but they're kind of using the flu vaccine as the model and basically saying, hey, since we do this with the flu vaccine and the flu's around, it's always going to be around. You know, COVID's the same way. It's around, it's always going to be around. We should put this model in place. That's kind of what they're trying to adopt. They're trying, and of course, they market it in a way that says, well, new variants are coming out all the time. They don't talk about how they've contributed to those new variants, but new variants are coming out all the time. We need to make it easy for pharmaceutical companies to pivot and put out new vaccines. The problem is that the original vaccine wasn't studied properly. So any subsequent vaccines are not going to be studied properly. And the influenza vaccine, albeit it was associated with the most adverse events of any other vaccine prior to COVID vaccines, isn't great. COVID vaccines far surpass that. This is mRNA. This is new stuff. This is not the same thing as getting an influenza vaccine. So it's very concerning. The other thing they might do is try to keep some sort of emergency use authorization in place that allows them to operate under the radar. Like, as you know, even with pediatric vaccines, they're studied for a whole lot longer. Some are studied for, or they say, are studied for 10 to 15 years. COVID vaccines were studied for 5 seconds. And I mean, a little sarcastic, but 2 months before they were authorized, 2 months, and that's nothing. So I think that that EUA allows them to do things that would not be okay with any other vaccination. So I think they're looking at multiple ways to go about it. They've got to be considering liability. You know, how are we going to ensure that these pharmaceutical companies can put out these future vaccines and not be held liable? But I don't think anything's been officially decided yet.
Yeah. So as an attorney, we think back to World War II. And at the end of that war, they had the Nuremberg trials where, you know, these doctors were experimenting on the Jewish captives, whatever they were doing, all this obscene medical experimentation. Their lives were meaningless. And some at least, of those doctors were held accountable. I feel like we're entering that phase. I mean, what's happening with COVID vaccines is nothing short of experimentation. What are your thoughts on that?
It is experimentation. It is against the Nuremberg Code. I can tell you with 100% certainty, because I've been in on these conversations, that there are lawyers and individuals throughout the United States looking at how to bring a case against Pfizer and Fauci and the FDA and various entities and individuals for crimes against humanity, which is really like what we need to go for here. And there is one case now, I think it's a UK case, in front of The Hague, which is who hears kind of these Nuremberg Code-like situations that are... It has not been kicked out. It's moving through. What will come of it, I'm not sure. But something definitely needs to happen with that, because it is like, it is Nuremberg 2.0.
Yeah, it feels that way. And folks, with the massive amount of data that Megan writes with all the time, that so many others are speaking and writing about, this is willful. Willful harm being inflicted on the population, because they know, they have to know. I'm sorry. I think pediatricians can keep their heads in the sand. They're busy in the trenches. They've swallowed the pill of vaccines are safe and effective, so they just don't look any further. But these folks who are, you know, approving this, for example, that unanimous vote from people who absolutely have to know better, the Paul Offits of the world, et cetera. I think you deserve to be brought to trial and made to, we're harming so many kids. I wanted to pivot. You mentioned as a parent and as someone who is vocal and speaking out and writing, blogging about these concerns with vaccines, that you even had a report to Child Protective Services. Mm-hmm. This is a fear I hear a lot. Parents will tell me they're afraid that they're just going to swoop in and take their kids, and then they'll vaccinate for that reason. Can you speak to parent rights and how they might be able to navigate that situation?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, I was embattled in I won't go into like super details because this is a limited time show.
Yes.
But I had a 3-year ordeal with Child Protective Services, and I was targeted because of my political beliefs, my beliefs on vaccines, and my blog. And the underlying issue was that, you know, I don't vaccinate my children. And I think that if a parent finds himself in that situation, for starters, they should get an attorney. You know, like if somebody from CPS ever comes and knocks on your door, you do not have to let them in. Like if they do not have a warrant, you do not have to let them in. And you should call an attorney that does family law or juvenile law. They don't even have to agree with you on your stance on vaccines. That doesn't matter. You still have rights, and that attorney can assert those rights for you. But it's definitely something that you have to be conscious of, because there are a lot of people who think that because you don't vaccinate your children, that is some sort of grounds for taking a child. And it's just not. It's illegal.
Okay, so get legal support, folks. It is illegal for them to come and interfere, even though the messaging you'll hear out there might have you believe otherwise.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. Pivot to your natural health wisdom. I feel like my career, I started mainstream medicine all the way. And as I started seeing more and more chronic disease in my supposedly well kids, I started questioning what I was doing as a pediatrician, what we're doing with mainstream medicine. And it's really in the last two decades almost, I've shifted more towards holistic, integrative, naturopathic approaches. I can't be a naturopath, I'm an MD, but that, you know, looking for root cause of things instead of just labeling and treating. But what is your take on what parents can do, what people can do for their own lives to improve their health?
Yeah, well, obviously, like you, I'm not giving medical or legal advice. So this is just my personal opinion on the situation. I think that everything starts with the food that you're eating and what you're putting into your body. Like people will ask me, what are you doing for COVID? I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything different than I did before the start of this pandemic. We're still eating healthy. We're still getting plenty of sleep, vitamin D, vitamin C, vitamin A. Like it seems so too simple. There's got to be like 10,000 supplements that we need to take or something that we need to do. And it is, in my opinion, true that there are certain natural supplements and studies to support those natural supplements' ability to help lessen the severity of SARS-CoV-2. And there are things you can do and things that you can take. I'm sure everybody watching your show has seen what those things are, because usually if the government's cracking down on something, you know that it works. But as sort of a prevention, it's as simple as what you're putting into your body and giving your body the things that it needs to fight whatever pathogen you're coming into contact with in your environment.
Yeah. I would add that I don't think people realize, because of we've been so indoctrinated, the war on this infection or that infection, that we are actually teeming with viruses and bacteria and even parasites, although we've gotten fairly sterile in our Western world. But we live in a symbiotic relationship, folks, with millions of bacteria and viruses. It's not really a war on the viruses. It's more about learning how to live in harmony. What would you say to that?
I completely agree. I think that people get so focused on, oh, the coronavirus, and they forget that, you know, you will probably agree with me, when coronavirus came on the scene, there was no more talk about measles. I mean, for like the 3 years prior, before the COVID pandemic, it was all about measles and measles outbreak at Disney World and measles is coming back and get your MMR vaccine. It's like, that was the only virus that existed. And then overnight, measles disappeared, the flu disappeared, influenza gone. And we just had COVID-19. That was the only virus. Nobody cared about the flu anymore, MMR anymore, anything, or measles anymore, nothing. And I think that we begin to think that that's like the only virus out there. And we just need to protect ourselves against COVID-19. And it's like, no, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of viruses and variants and bacteria and germs every single day. If we could like get a little microscope, like a really good one, and look at our skin or our clothing, we would see it and it would just gross us out. But nobody thinks that way.
They don't. I have a very close friend whose 22-year-old son is quite sick right now with, it could be COVID. I don't think it is. It could be mono. Who knows? It's along those lines with, you know, it's been sore throat and cough and fever and body aches, severe fatigue, stuff we see all the time pre-COVID and with COVID in the world. And here's the interesting thing. His doctor's office will not see him because he might have COVID. Now, the insanity of that, if I just go back 3 years prior to COVID and we're talking the sickest kids who need to be seen, who have that same sort of thing, right? They might have high fevers, sore throats, bad cough, terrible fatigue, lethargic. You have to see those kids. Within that subset, there might be a child with meningitis. Probably not. Haven't seen meningitis in 20 years, but it can happen. Certainly, it could be pneumonia. And there certainly are some bacterial things that could be treated with antibiotics. I'm not a fan of antibiotics, but boy, when you need them, they can be miraculous. When we used to have those sickest kids, we used to do a respiratory panel that covered about 30 different things. And here's what we would find at the height of the flu season, because flu back then, flu was always the biggest thing. There would be 5 to 10% positive for flu. That's flu A or B. There's 90 to 95% were non-flu. There were things like coronavirus and rhinovirus and RSV and a long list, right? Some of them bacteria infections that could be treated. And as a clinician, as a doctor, you would assess severity. Do they need to be hospitalized? And then you'd assess, do they need antibiotics? You don't treat viruses with antibiotics. And you help that patient get better. You support them. You treat where you need to. The point I wanted to also get to, though, is that this, even if the flu shot was effective against A or B, if that means they picked the right strains, because they always make a guess, the most you could get is 10% if you had a perfect vaccine. And those vaccines usually run 10 to 40% match effectiveness. So the flu shot was fairly worthless. Now, pivot that to the COVID situation. I think it's just as bad or worse. We've got vaccines that were targeting a Wuhan strain. Now,
that's no longer circulating.
It is not in our world. And so this is what they're going to mandate your child to take, a dangerous product that goes against a strain that doesn't exist. The insanity of it is just beyond comprehension.
It's like taking an influenza vaccine for an influenza strain we no longer have that wasn't effective against that strain to begin with, and thinking that it's going to work against other strains if you take three doses of it.
Right. It's just
not, and they don't even actually claim that it's 100% effective. They already admit that it's not effective even after three doses. There's going to have to be another fourth dose even after the other three. This is like an endless vaccine treadmill of vaccines that do not work.
Yeah, here's the insanity of that thinking. Well, we didn't get enough of a boost in our antibodies or effectiveness from two, so we're going to do another booster. So if something doesn't work, let's do more of it. It's insanity.
That is the definition of insanity, is doing something over and over and expecting a different result.
Yes, it is. When we were on our panel together, you had a list of did you knows. I thought that was so, so fun. Do you remember a few of them?
My goodness. I don't even remember my did you know list. You probably do.
Yeah, I have a few of them, but you've covered a lot of it. It's fine. The funny one is just like, wake up, folks. I think it was Pfizer. You correct me if I'm wrong, but they wanted to release their documents of all the information they had on their studies in 75 years. So close all the information to the public for 75 years. Is that correct?
It was 75 years. And I just think it's ironic because most of us will be dead. So all of the people that are advocating for that release of information, I'm not going to be around in 75 years. So it's like, you take it now, you just trust us, and in 75 years, we'll tell you what we proffered forward 75 years prior. That's ridiculous.
It shows they have so much to hide. And in fact, some of those documents they've been forced to release, and the information's coming out, isn't it? It's horrific.
It's coming out, and I think it's going to open the floodgates of litigation, which is why they didn't want it to come out in the first place, because the one thing you can sue a pharmaceutical company for in this situation is fraud. And in my personal non-legal opinion, there's a lot of it going on.
There's a lot of fraud going on. So I'm going to pivot now to a grander sort of look at the world or our country. Where are we headed as a country? Where are we headed as a world, just from what you've observed in your work?
I don't know. Like, I'd like to believe that this kind of growing pain, awful time in our world is leading to something better. But obviously I have like a spiritual perspective on things that goes counter to that. But I do think that their agenda is not over. I think this was like the warm up. I think the one thing that kept these people from doing what they wanted to do, which was mass vaccination of everybody, vaccine mandates, vaccine passports, universal tracking systems, universalized medicine, complete control, shutting down all specific, all certain sectors of businesses, affecting your family home. I mean, they had a whole list. I think what stopped that from going into place was our legal system and people challenging the legal system. We have an OSHA mandate right now. If our attorney generals hadn't challenged that and our Supreme Court didn't overturn or basically said, hey, we're not going to enforce this, we'd have so many different types of mandates now. We'd still have a universal mask mandate on public transportation if lawyers didn't challenge that. And I think that's why, and I won't like confuse everybody listening to your show. I think that's why we see the WHO, the World Health Organization, kind of being brought in to circumvent this when COVID 2.0 happens. And I don't know if it will be called COVID 2.0, but as Bill Gates has said, and he's pretty accurate when it comes to pandemics and when they'll happen.
Isn't that interesting?
He says another one's coming. And I do think we should listen to him because he's on the inside and he's involved in all of this. So he probably knows. If we can give the World Health Organization power over declaring when a pandemic happens and how nations who are part of the WHO, which we are, have to respond to that pandemic, you can take that power from the American legal system and us and put it with the WHO, which circumvents everything that they were trying to, well, it reinforces everything that they were trying to do the first time around that failed. Does that make sense?
Yep. So
we're heading somewhere scary, but we don't have to. Does that?
Yes.
Or we can fight against it.
We are doing our best to those of us who have become aware that we even have a problem, right? It's who you trust almost, right? I have a mom who has been on beside me all the way. She knows all my information. She knows about vaccine risk. She took the COVID vaccines and I'm talking to her about it. She's about to get a booster and yeah, I probably should need to do that. I'm high risk. And then she says to me at one point, sorry, Mom, if you're listening, you've heard me say this before. Well, Paul, how can you be right and everybody else is wrong? And that's what sometimes we feel like we're up against, right? I mean, when you're trying to educate parents and they're looking at you like you're crazy because everybody knows that whatever it is, right? Everybody knows vaccines are safe and effective. And so then if your own mother can't trust that you are actually speaking the truth, we still got some work to do.
Yeah. And I think too, it's like, well, there are many people and many scientists and physicians who are working to get the truth out there. But when you are censored, when you're censoring an entire viewpoint, it creates the perception that person over there that's saying don't follow the herd is the only one. And so that's what's happened, because the alternative view, which I happen to believe is right, is not publicized, is censored, is ostracized, because there are billions of our taxpayer dollars that go to censoring anything that challenges the COVID vaccine narrative. You begin to think that those people over there are crazy. There's only five of them and they're crazy and they don't know what they're talking about. And it's not until people in your world get injured and are like, I think the only thing that could have happened was that I got vaccinated or got boosted, or it happens to you, that you're like, okay, wait a minute, maybe I've been lied to. And some people, even when that happens, still refuse to believe that their choice in getting vaccinated contributed to their health condition. So with your mom, if you're listening, Paul's mom, your son is not alone. He's right. They're just not publicizing his viewpoint.
Yep.
Maybe she'll listen to me.
Maybe she will. I'm going to have her give you a call. Like, you need to talk to everybody's mom. You got plenty of time. Yeah, you bring up such a great point there. So as we get close to wrapping it up here, what do you think is the most important thing somebody should do or what they need to know?
Oh, that's like a tough one. I would say, number one, keep educating yourself. Make sure you're following people who put out good information. Don't rely on it to show up in your Facebook feed. Don't rely on it to show up on the mainstream media. Follow Substack, follow people on Twitter, follow CHDTV, follow CHD or The Defender. Anybody who is a trustworthy source of information, TrialSite News is another one that you can follow to educate, just widen your knowledge base. The second thing that obviously is question everything. You have the right to question everything. You should be questioning everything. Don't make a decision based off of fear. That's a very reactive decision that you are highly likely to regret no matter which one you choose. You need to make a decision based off of what's rational and what's logical and what's informed, so that no matter the outcome, you are confident in the decision that you made, because you made the absolute best decision with the information that you had at the time. And I would just say, obviously, get involved first and foremost on your local level and in your own communities. Studies show that the number one way to reach people with your vaccine messaging is to do it like face-to-face, neighbor-to-neighbor, friend-to-friend. So it's in your local pods or communities or groups that you're in, you're sharing your experience with other people and you're educating people who may not know about any of these things, because you're already invited into the world and they're likely to listen to you. You have to have a big platform to educate people. It helps, but it should not be an excuse not to educate the people and influence and inform the people in your world around you. And also just fight for your kids, because nobody else is going to do it like you can.
Yep. So true, folks. I can second with a very strong endorsement, childrenshealthdefense.org. The Defender, their daily online news, is probably one of the most read in the world. And what I love about that journal is you provide links to the actual data. So, you know, people say, well, show me the data. Go check it out. Don't listen to what they're spouting on the news. So help me if you're willing to try this little exercise, and then we'll wrap it up here with this. But this is big, folks. You mentioned we need to talk to our neighbors. I live in Oregon, and it feels like 80, 90% of my neighbors are living in a different world. They're living in the world where vaccines are safe. The virus is very scary. For the longest time, kids would be masked outdoors, 6 feet apart, waiting for a bus. And only recently have they gotten their masks off in school. Of course, school is closing. So I'm going to be your neighbor who believes in the vaccine. And you're going to introduce this topic. How do we do this?
You know what I would do? I'm going to kind of give you an answer that is you're not probably expecting, but you know that saying, actions speak louder than words? I think that if I had a neighbor who I knew was not maybe open to having that conversation. I don't even know if I would sit down to talk to that person. I think I would influence them with my actions and then create an environment where I'm approachable. So like, I'm going to take my kid out without a mask. I'm not going to wear a mask. I'm going to make it comfortable to not follow the herd. And I'm going to make myself just open and available to having a conversation with that person. And I feel like 90% of the time, it's not going in and being like, hey, let's talk about vaccines today. Do you vaccinate your kid? No, it's like you connect over a topic that you mutually share interest in. You form a relationship with that person. And then at that point, you have that conversation. That's not always how it happens, but that's how I approach people who are, I just are really not the easiest people to have that conversation with.
Yeah. Excellent advice. Thank you so much for being on the show. This has been very enlightening, and all the best.
Thank you.
Welcome, Bernadette Pager. You are our Be the News segment of Against the Wind. So great to have you back. You do so much more as well. Public Policy Director of Informed Choice Washington. You have your own show and Informed Life Radio and so much more. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here. And, you know, what I want to talk to your viewers about today, we've talked about before, but we need those constant reminders and we need to be shown again where to get good information. I'm going to share with you three of my favorite places to get printables, things that you can have in hand. If you just go to Children's Health Defense and then look on their menu tab on the left, you'll see Advocacy Hub in the drop-down menu as an easy way to get there. They have got everything you can imagine. There are videos that you can share on your social media platforms. Share them everywhere. Some of them you can download and then re-upload, so you don't, you know, have to risk sharing somewhere that gets censored. There are social media memes you can share, stickers that you can get printed, and you can leave these stickers anywhere you want. That just are, a lot of them are snarky, and they just help people think critically. There are informational flyers that cite the science and the evidence of you know, how dangerous these shots are, that are very professionally done. So CHD's Advocacy Hub is an excellent place. And you got to go back often because they are continually updated. As times change, as things change and the evidence changes, they update their information. And the same goes for Stand for Health Freedom, SHF. They have a printable resources page. Just look for that on their menu tab. And way more than I've got pictured here, they've got these beautiful printable flyers. Many of them are double-sided that you can print out and distribute everywhere you go. And I'm going to give people some ideas of where they can go with these things. And then the last place, those are great, those one-on-one conversations, those leave behinds to have on a table at events. But if you want to get really loud, go to V is for Vaccine. You can get t-shirts. You can get all kinds of postcards with information. But what I most love about what you can get is at V is for Vaccine is you can get those massive signs that you see pictured here that are people are holding up. And they've got a lot of them pre-designed and very affordable. And you can order 15, 20, 100 of them for your group to go quietly, peacefully march with these signs that are so big and they're so beautifully done and so uniform. They make a very chilling impact wherever they show up. And you can order banners. They've got them now so that you can get individual words so that you can get your own messaging. I wanted your viewers to kind of understand where they can do this. So in your everyday world, have them in your purse, have them in your vehicle, anywhere there's a community bulletin board. Laundromats are a great place where there's a place that you can set stuff down for people to read. Sometimes libraries will allow you to have leave behinds. You can get printed up business cards really inexpensively that just have links to your favorite sites like CHD, like Against the Wind, you know, all the different things on there, and then list, scatter them like Johnny Appleseed. Another good thing to do is maybe laminate one copy of your favorite flyer or a couple of favorite flyers, or slip it in one of those protective sleeves, because a lot of times, you know, it's expensive to print, or and people don't want to take something, but they'll take a snapshot with their camera. Everybody's got a camera now. And so you can have one with you at all times. I often do that at event tables. I'll just have one laminated right down on the table and people just take a snapshot. And then they always have it with them. They don't have to remember where did they put that flyer because it's on their phone. And then they can go from there. So that's another easy way to do it, to get the information out there. Summertime is here and people can get out there. You can go to farmers markets and street fairs and all of these places. Sometimes they allow you to hand things out. If you don't, sometimes you have to have it at your own booth or table. But even not, what you can do, and I've done this, is find the nearest sidewalk adjacent to where this public event, this public gathering is happening, and anybody can use the public sidewalk. Stand there with your handouts, your flyers, your signs, and
your t-shirts,
yep, and get the information out there. So make use of the, go everywhere people are gathering and have the information to hand out.
Yep.
It's so empowering. The conversations you have with people, Dr. Paul, are so heartwarming, and people are so grateful when you give them, especially a fact-filled sheet with the science, because they'll say, oh, I need my mother to understand. I need my daughter to understand. You know, right. I want to protect my grandchildren. And they're hungry to know where to get information. Your viewers know a lot of what I'm saying. But yeah, a lot of the people,
how do we share it with others? And thank you, Bernadette. This is an incredible set of resources. I struggle with that as well, but it's time. It's past time. Our kids have a bullseye on them and they're coming for them right now.
Yeah.
They're celebrating the fact that we can vaccinate 6 month olds who are at, I mean, kids in, of any age are at no risk from this virus. Mm-hmm. What is risky is the vaccine. So it's all risk, no benefit. We have got to get the word out to as many people as possible. Thank you, Bernadette.
Yeah.
This was really important information.
You're welcome. And if I can make just one more point, at one of the FDA meetings, one of the committee members asked the question, how do you tell, because they cannot speak, if an infant is experiencing myocarditis? They had no answers for that. Just keep that in mind. If you're feeling shy, you're feeling nervous about getting out there and handing out the information, remember you have a voice. Those yep. babies don't.
And the sad thing is, the way you would tell is once they're turning blue or struggling to breathe for air because their heart's failing or they just die. I just read in the newspaper a day or two ago that there's going to be a huge outbreak of sudden deaths in young people 6 months and older due to the heat wave because of global warming. Folks, they're just preparing you for the massive wave of deaths that are going to follow this vaccine campaign. And you watch, the most of these deaths will happen within the first few days after the vaccine. And then there's another whole wave when myocarditis develops, which can take longer. And everybody's going to go, oh, we don't know. It must be global warming. Wake up. It is the vaccine. It's a kill shot. It is dangerous. It has no business being in anybody's body, but certainly not children.
Exactly. Be brave. Be the voice of the children.
Amen. Thank you, Bernadette.
Thank you.
Dr. Paul, thanks for watching the show. Please visit doctorsandscience.com. There you can access our members-only section. This show is member-supported. We don't have to take sponsors. We don't have to have anybody controlling the content of our show. This is a huge perk most people aren't aware of. Your membership gives you access to my ebooks, transcripts of every show, PowerPoints from talks I'm giving around the country, and live bonus peeks at behind-the-scenes work we're doing, my off-the-cuff thoughts and reviews on current events. Your support makes all this possible. Thank you. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.